Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, your host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report Podcast, and today is April the 29th, 2024. It has been 3,745 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 69 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 66 days since Russia expanded its war of aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened over the weekend. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description. There are a lot of map updates today, and regrettably, there isn't a lot of good news. The Russia-Ukraine war report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine morning reports, operational commands north, south, and east of Ukraine, open-source intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian male bloggers and social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission, the truth, because the truth matters. Here is my daily assessment. 1. Our assessment that Russian forces would continue to intensify their ground attacks before significant aid from the US, the Czech Republic-led ammunition initiative, Belgium, the European Union, and the United Kingdom arrive in Ukraine was accurate, with Russian forces carrying 315 attacks and a large-scale missile strike over the weekend. 2. We maintain that enough aid to have a material impact on stabilizing Ukrainian ground and air defenses will be in the theater of war within 3 to 5 weeks. 3. Our assessment that the Russian breach of Ukrainian defensive lines in the area of Ocheretene and Novobakhmutivka in Donetsk Oblast would force Ukrainian troops to withdraw from the Durna River line in the Avdiivka area of operation was accurate, with Russian troops making rapid tactical gains over the last 48 hours. 4. Ukrainian forces continue to have insufficient ammunition resources, particularly short-range air defense systems, which enable the holding of existing defensive lines and protect the civilian population. 5. The world is caught in the mutually assured destruction and stability paradox, with renewed nuclear threats by Kremlin leadership and Polish leadership openly discussing forward deploying United States nuclear weapons. 6. In our assessment, Russian forces achieving their operational goal of capturing Chasiv Yar by May the 9th is unlikely, but efforts to capture the strategically important settlement, regardless of cost, will continue. 7. We maintain that Russia is setting conditions for a wider attack in the direction of Vuhledar. 8. Russia's trampling of international humanitarian law has been accelerating since March the 22nd. In our assessment, the willful ignoring of blatant Russian war crimes by international watchdogs will continue to encourage escalation. 9. The disjointed response to Russian aggression by Ukraine's allies continues to embolden Moscow, leading to the most serious airspace violation of a NATO country since Russia expanded its war of aggression on February 24, 2022. Inaction by the United States and the excessively risk-averse rules of engagement forced on the NATO alliance are creating an environment ripe for a serious international incident. 10. The attacks on Ukraine's energy infrastructure have incrementally increased the chance of an intentional nuclear accident at multiple nuclear facilities in Ukraine, and the situation is more serious, especially at the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. Russia conducted numerous attacks on civilians and civilian infrastructure over the weekend. In Kharkiv, a Russian S-300 anti-aircraft missile used for a ground attack struck a psychiatric hospital. The facility houses over 900, with the most damage occurring in a building with 60 patients and 5 medical staff. One 53-year-old was wounded, and patients were moved to other buildings on the campus. Attacks on hospitals, even if they are caring for military patients, is a violation of international humanitarian law. A Russian airstrike on Derhachi wounded 4, including 3 children, one as young as 4. All lie in hospital. In Vovchansk, a Russian first-person view, or FPV, one-way drone struck a truck, wounding the driver and a passenger. Russian cross-border artillery fire also killed a pensioner. A Fab-500 UMPK glide bomb struck Kupiansk, destroying a home and wounding 2 civilians. Another Russian airstrike on Shestakovo wounded 1, and a drone attack on the border village of Sotnitsky Kozachok wounded 2 humanitarian aid workers. In Zaporizhia, an industrial facility was hit by a Russian missile. 1 person was injured in the attack. No other information was provided. In Free Kherson Oblast, Russian shelling, airstrikes and drone attacks over the weekend killed 1 and wounded 15. Almost 2 dozen villages, settlements and cities were targeted. The VKS, that's the Russian Aerospace Forces, bombed a school in Berislav, destroying the campus. And Kherson was hit by a missile, damaging critical civilian infrastructure. An Iranian-sourced Shahed 136 one-way drone struck a hotel in Mykolaiv, heavily damaging the building. No one was injured, and the property had just completed repairs from a 2022 missile attack. Russia continued shelling the Nikopol rayon of Dnipropetrovsk Oblast from fire bases near the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant and targeted the area with 13 one-way drones. 2 women, including a pensioner, were wounded in the attack and die in hospital. On Saturday, Russia launched 34 missiles at Ukraine, including 9 KH-101 or 555 subsonic cruise missiles from 2 95MS strategic bombers, 2 S-300 anti-aircraft missiles used for a ground attack that I previously mentioned, 2 Iskander-K ballistic cruise missiles, 4 KH-47 M2 Kinjal air-to-surface ballistic missiles from MiG-31K multirole aircraft, and 8 Kalibr cruise missiles from 2-kilo-class submarines with the Black Sea Fleet. It was the largest number of Kalibr missiles launched since September 2023, and the first significant launch since Russia relocated fleet operations to Novorossiysk in Krasnodar Krai. During the attack, the Kinjal missiles flew through Belarusian airspace, and Poland scrambled F-16s twice, supported by a KC-135T Stratotanker tanker with the United States Air Force. Ukrainian air defenses were able to intercept 6 KH-101, 8 KH-59, 1 Iskander-K, and 6 Kalibr missiles. The executive director of DTEK, Dmytro Sakharuk, said that this was the 4th attack since March the 22nd to target the company's electrical generation facilities, with 4 power stations suffering, quote, quite significant damage. In Dnipropetrovsk Oblast, the Pridnipropska thermal power plant was hit. The plant supervisor and an engineer were injured. The Burshtinska thermal power plant in the Ivano-Frankivsk Oblast was also hit, causing a large fire and severe damage. In the Lviv region, the Dobrotvir thermal power plant was hit by 2 Russian missiles, causing severe damage. Also in Lviv, the Naftohaz natural gas compressor station and underground storage site north of Stryi was attacked for the 5th time since March. Gas service to Ukraine, Hungary, Slovakia and Poland was unaffected. The United Nations Human Rights Monitoring Mission in Ukraine reported that 604 civilians were killed or wounded in March, including 57 children killed. The number of children that died doubled compared to February, and total casualties increased by 20%. This highlights the increase in Russian attacks on civilians and civilian infrastructure and the impact of delayed military aid. Here is today's action report. The situation in eastern Ukraine deteriorated over the weekend, with Russian forces making numerous tactical advances. Russian commanders are exploiting any weaknesses found in Ukrainian defensive lines by using small groups of troops to attack in waves across the line of conflict. Russian air supremacy and the widespread use of thousands of glide bombs a month significantly improved intelligence, surveillance, target acquisition and reconnaissance, referred to as ISTAR, and a recent increase in the number of FPV one-way drones is making it very challenging for Ukrainian forces. While delays in Western aid have significantly contributed to the current situation, many Ukrainian units are combat ineffective due to losses and delays in further mobilization by Ukraine. Any mistake, such as the failed troop rotation of the 115th Mechanized Brigade and a series of communication breakdowns, is exploited by Russian commanders. Realistically, the situation won't stabilize until June. The Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, Colonel General Oleksandr Syrsky, provided a detailed update on the situation, saying in part, quote, "The situation at the front worsened. Trying to seize the strategic initiative and break through the front line, the enemy concentrated the main efforts in several directions, creating a significant advantage in forces and means. Actively attacks along the entire front line, has tactical success in some areas. There is a dynamic change in the situation. Individual positions change from hand to hand several times during the day, which gives rise to an ambiguous understanding of the situation." Unquote. In our assessment, Russian forces have essentially started their spring-summer offensive, launching 315 discrete ground attacks over the weekend across the entire front. With Russian autocrat Vladimir Putin's inauguration on May the 6th and Victory Day on May the 9th, and Moscow's understanding that significant military aid to Ukraine is still weeks away, the Kremlin likely started its broader offensive earlier than planned. Russia will make additional rapid tactical advances through May, with the potential to achieve operational success in Chasiv Yar if they dedicate more resources. We maintain our early assessment that 20,000 to 25,000 Russian troops is an insufficient force to capture Chasiv Yar, Ivanivske, Klishchiivka, and the ridges east of the Siversky-Donets-Donbass Canal. Additionally, while we agree with the most recent report by the Institute of the Study of War that Ukrainian forces will be able to stabilize their defensive lines this summer, we completely disagree that Ukrainian forces will be prepared to launch any counteroffensive efforts in 2024. Now, let's talk about what happened on the battlefield. There are a lot of map updates, and this would be a good time to open up our war map. There is more information in the podcast description, and we start near Kharkiv and follow the line of conflict to Kherson. Ready? While neither combatant has reported significant fighting in the northern part of the Kupiansk area of operation, or AO, in weeks, both Russia and Ukraine claimed they made tactical gains near Sinkivka. East of Kupiansk, Russian forces advanced across the railroad line into Kislivka and raised a flag south of the railroad station. Fighting continued in the eastern part of the village, and reports that Kislivka is under Russian control were false. In the Svatovo AO, Russian forces increased the number of attacks, trying to take advantage of the redeployment of Ukrainian reserve forces to other axes. Russian forces continued their assaults east of Berestovo without success. In Luhansk Oblast, Russian forces attempted to advance south of Novoselivske, suffered significant losses, and retreated to their previous defensive lines. We link to a video in our Almost Daily Situation report. There is more information on how to become a patron in the podcast description. Ukrainian CIC Colonel General Syrsky said that Russian forces were able to make marginal gains near Stelmachivka before Ukrainian forces could restabilize their defensive lines. The General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, also known as GSAFU, reported that Russian attacks in the area of Kopanke and Novosergiivka, both in Kharkiv Oblast, were repulsed. Our existing intelligence has Ukrainian forces holding the hamlets of Nadiya, Novoyegorivka, and Tverdokhlibove, and we assess that these were probing attacks by squad or platoon-sized sabotage and reconnaissance units. We expanded the gray area to include Nadiya, based on the Ukrainian report. Further south, Russian forces continued their attacks on Makiivka with no change in the situation. In the Kremenaya AO, Russian forces attempted to advance in the direction of Nevske without success. There was only positional fighting east of Terny. Fighting also continued south of Dubrova, with no change in the situation. In the Siversky AO of Luhansk Oblast, Ukrainian CIC Syrsky reported that Russian attacks east of Bilohorivka failed. Russian forces also continued their attempts to advance on Verkhnyokamenskoye from Zolotarivka without success. Moving to the Donbas, in northeastern Donetsk Oblast, fighting continued in the Siversky of Donetsk Oblast. Russian and Ukrainian forces continued to trade defensive positions southeast of Vyimka, with no significant change in the situation. In the Konstantinivka AO, Russian attempts to advance in the direction of Grigorivka failed. Russian mercenary Milbloga Vogonzo claimed that Russian attacks in the direction of Chasiv Yar have mostly stopped as they consolidate gains and wait for reinforcements. The deputy commander of the 92nd Mechanized Infantry Brigade, Oles Malarevich, countered the claim, saying, quote, "The enemy continues to put pressure on Chasiv Yar, trying 24/7. So far, he has had no territorial and tactical successes. The day before yesterday, the positions to the south were even returned by the forces of our brigade from Ivanivske." Unquote. Fighting continued on the outskirts of Bogdanivka and the Novy micro-district of Chasiv Yar. A claim by the Russian Ministry of Defense, also known as Armod, that fighting was ongoing within Chasiv Yar is false. South of Ivanivske, Russian forces were able to briefly reoccupy the tree line and trenches west of the Garden Duchess in southwest Bakhmut before being pushed out by Ukrainian artillery strikes and drone attacks. Northwest of Klishivka, Ukrainian forces were able to make marginal gains, pushing Russian troops back north of the railroad grade. GCFU reported fighting restarted southeast of Andriivka, with no change in the situation. In the Avdiivka AO, Russian forces continue to flank Ukrainian defensive positions and are advancing on the T-511 highway in the direction of Progress. Russian forces are not conducting a breakthrough, but are expanding their breach. On Sunday, Russian troops carried out 55 assaults along the axis. Ukrainian CIC Sirsky said, quote, "The most difficult situation is in the Pokrovsk and Kurakhove directions, where fierce battles continue. The enemy deployed up to 4 brigades in these directions and is trying to develop an offensive west of Avdiivka and Marinka. Units of the Defense Forces of Ukraine, preserving the lives and health of our defenders, moved to new frontiers west of Berdychi, Semenivka and Novomikhailivka. In general, the enemy achieved certain tactical successes in these directions, but could not gain operational advantages." Unquote. Here's what's happened in the last 48 hours. Ukrainian forces had to withdraw to the outskirts of Novokalinovo, enabling Russian forces to reach the village of Keramik. North of Keramik, the terrain becomes less favorable for Russian troops, and Ukrainian forces will have an opportunity to establish a new defensive line. Russian forces control 80-90% of Ocheretene and were able to advance west of the settlement on the railroad grade and the T-511 highway in the direction of Novoalexandrivka. Russian attacks in the direction of Arkhangelske, where the terrain is less favorable, were repulsed. 98-year-old Lydia Stepanovna fled Ocheretene on foot, walking 10 kilometers to safety. Speaking with a Ukrainian soldier, she said, quote, "I survived World War II, but this war is worse. In World War II, not a single house in our village burned, and now there's nothing left." Armod reported the capture of Novobakhmutivka, which we assessed occurred on April the 25th. Russian forces captured Berdychi on Saturday, raising a flag over the remains of the village. Russian forces also captured Solovyovo, with GCFU reporting that Russian attacks in the direction of Sokol were repulsed. Russian forces also attempted to advance southwest in the direction of Novopokrovskoye without success. Russian forces also captured Semenivka, crossing the Durna River, and started to advance in the direction of Novoselivka-Persha. Russian forces were held back east of Umanske, but the situation for Ukrainian forces is becoming more difficult. Russian troops were able to gain military control of Pervomayske and advanced to the center of Netailovo. A German-provided Marder 1A3 infantry fighting vehicle was destroyed on the western edge of the settlement. Russian forces are almost to the eastern edge of the Karlovsky Reservoir and the Vovcha River, which would be the next natural defensive line. Ukrainian forces have not been able to build adequate defensive structures along the natural barriers, which will make continued defense difficult. Intense fighting continued in the Vuhledar Raion, where the situation was equally difficult. Russian troops are on the southern edge of the refractory factory in Krasnohorivka and are continuing their attacks from the south and the east. Russian forces restarted more intense attacks east of Georgievka and near Pobeda, with no change in the situation. After the Ukrainian withdrawal from Novomikhailivka, Ukrainian sources reported fighting was ongoing in the village of Paraskovievka, with Russian forces setting conditions to attack Kostyantynivka. East of Vuhledar, Russian attempts to advance from Solodke in the direction of Vodyane continued to be unsuccessful. Russian forces also continued to lock Ukrainian troops in place in the Staromlinivka AO, maintaining attacks southeast of Vorozhayne and west of Staromayorske, with no change in the situation. In the Orikhiv AO of Zaporizhia Oblast, there was only light fighting in the no-man's land south and southeast of Robotyne. In the Kherson AO, Russian forces launched a single attack on Ukrainian positions in Krynke, suffered losses and retreated. CIC Syrsky reported that Ukrainian forces liberated Nestriha Island in the Dnipro River Delta, southwest of Kherson. In occupied Hola Pristan, multiple drones struck a building occupied by Russian troops.
You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. Our team of journalists, researchers, and analysts is funded by readers, listeners, and viewers just like you. To support independent journalism, please consider becoming a patron. You can find us on patreon.com at Malcontent News.
It was also very busy on the Russian front. In the city of Naberezhny Chilny in the Republic of Tatarstan, a 1,000-square-meter workshop at the KAMAZ plant had a significant fire. The factory produces military trucks, and the impact on operations is unclear. The blaze was not caused by military action. In Kaluga, Russian sources reported a gasoline storage tank was destroyed by a Ukrainian drone strike at the Kaluga Neftyprodukt oil depot. Three drones were involved in the attack. On Saturday, the Kushchevskaya military airfield in Krasnodar Krai was hit by Ukrainian drones, destroying a warehouse with UMPK glide bombs aerial kits and likely damaging at least one aircraft based on satellite images. During the same attack, the Slavyansk refinery was hit by multiple drones, damaging one of the distillation towers, according to Eduard Trudnev, the security director of Slavyansk ECO. Before the attack, the refinery processed 5.3 million metric tons of crude a year. In Krasnaya Polyana of the Belgorod region, a Ukrainian drone strike destroyed a Russian 48 Y6K1 Podlyot radar. Islamic militants carried out another terror attack in the Karachay-Cherkessia region, ambushing officers with the Ministry of Internal Affairs in Mara-Ayagy, killing two and wounding four. The main Defense Intelligence Directorate of the Ministry of Defense of Ukraine, better known as the UHUR, destroyed a diesel locomotive in Orenburg, Russia. On Friday, a similar attack was carried out in the North Ossetia-Alania Republic city of Vladikavkaz. Satellite images confirmed that Ukrainian drones that struck a Russian fuel depot near Smolensk last week destroyed eight tanks of various sizes and damaged a ninth. Up to 26,000 cubic meters of fuel products were lost. Satellite images also showed that Russia was building a new military airfield in Alekseyevka in the Belgorod region. Located 75 kilometers from the border of Ukraine, the 1,800-meter-long single runway can accommodate helicopters, smaller transport aircraft, and Su-25 ground attack aircraft. Over the weekend, the paving of the runway started. Here is my theater-wide update. There were multiple Russian reports that ATACMS missiles destroyed a Russian air defense station on Cape Tarhankut without evidence. At the time of recording, we could not independently verify the claims. In Odessa Oblast, near Korsunsi, a Yak-52 Soviet-era military trainer with a machine gun mount in the second seat shot down a Russian Arlan-10 drone in an air-to-air kill. The Yak-52 is propeller-driven and highlights the ongoing issues with air defense in Ukraine. On Saturday, in Dnipropetrovsk Oblast, a Russian Iskander missile struck the Kamyanka airfield west of Dnipro. The civilian airport is a grass field, and the missile appeared to miss its primary target, striking adjacent to a cluster of Quonset hut buildings, heavily damaging two. Russian ISTAR has significantly improved, and a lack of air defense has enabled reconnaissance and surveillance drones to operate freely up to 100 kilometers from the line of conflict. In the German town of Murnau, a 57-year-old Russian citizen and Kremlin mill blogger stabbed two Ukrainian soldiers to death. The pair were in Germany for medical care after suffering severe injuries and had limited use of their limbs. One was 23 and the other was 36. The Russian suspect reportedly tried to flee and has a home near Murnau. He has not been identified. British intelligence estimates that 450,000 Russian troops have been killed or wounded since February 24, 2022, and tens of thousands more have rioted or deserted. The latest assessment estimates Russia has also lost 10,000 armored vehicles, including almost 3,000 main battle tanks, 1,500 artillery and mortar pieces, 109 aircraft, 136 helicopters, and 23 naval vessels. Latvia is sending a 250 MVA high-voltage transformer, an air compressor, and 60 metric tons of transformer oil to Ukraine from the decommissioned Riga hydroelectric power plant. Italy confirmed that it had sent some of the 200 Storm Shadow cruise missiles it holds in inventory to Ukraine. Australia announced it was sending a $65 million military aid package to Ukraine, which includes man-portable air defense systems, funds for the Latvia and United Kingdom-led drone coalition, and air defense missiles. The United States bought 81 scrap MiG-29 fighters and MiG-27 and Su-24 multi-role fighter planes from Kazakhstan for $2.26 million, roughly $19,300 each. The airframes were put into service in the 1970s and 1980s and are likely destined for Ukraine for spare parts and use as airfield decoys. And that's what we know. Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.